You were now at place number four, by the right-hand gate leading into the north choir aisle. Ahead of you, to the east, you will hear the more enclosed sound of the aisle, which contrasts with that of the high transept and crossing that you have just left. The aisle leads straight down to the Lady Chapel at the east end. This wrought iron metal gate, together with a screen around it, is painted dark blue and gold, and is a fine example of the skilled decorative ironwork of the 18th century. Feel the defined edges of the iron. The scrolls and leaf shapes have been forged with a hammer from red-hot metal. Next, follow the gate to the other end and take a couple of paces forward to find on your right the cast iron railings which protect the large organ pipes. Follow the railings around to the other end. Stop by the corner. Switch off now and switch on again when you are by the corner at the other end of the railings.
These cast iron railings feel more solid with smooth edges. They were cast in mouldings made of sand and are painted black, gold, and red. Contrast them with the wrought iron gate. Behind these railings are the large organ pipes, which play the low notes of the organ. To reach them, follow the plain railings around to your left. Feel over the railings to find one of the square wooden pipes. These pipes are 2 feet, or just over half a meter, square and around 32 feet high. The note that a pipe produces is related to its length, and so pipes that play low notes like this are called 32-foot stops. The area of the choir is to your left, divided from the aisle by a high wooden screen. Choral evensong takes place in the choir on most days of the year, and a choir rehearsal is held here before each service. Other rehearsals take place in the camera cantorum, or singing room, on the south side of the building. The cathedral choir is made up of 16 to 20 choristers and up to 4 probationers, who all attend the Minster School. There are also 12 song men, adult singers who sing either alto, tenor, or bass. Listen now to the choir rehearsing for the service of evensong. Next, turn away from the organ pipes and with your back to them, walk straight along the aisle to find the large marble monument to Archbishop Sterne. It projects into the aisle. Switch off now and switch on again when you have reached the corner of the monument.
You are now by the monument to Richard Sterne, who was Archbishop of York from 1664 to 1683. The effigy is on top of a tomb chest, and the Archbishop lies on his left side with his head propped up by his hand, a very typical pose of the 17th century. Feel how cool the white marble is to touch. There are many monuments and wall tablets in the minster. Medieval ones include the monument of Archbishop de Grey in the south transept and the alabaster effigy of Prince William of Hatfield, who died in 1346, aged 10. He was the son of Edward III and Philippa of Hainault, who were married in the minster. The monument has been recently restored. In the north choir aisle is the memorial to Admiral Medley. This has a tablet with finely carved ships on it. In the south choir aisle is the metal memorial to William Mason, precentor of the minster in the 18th century, and his nephew, William Dixon, Canon of York. It is made by Skidmore, the distinguished 19th century firm of church furnishers. Here also, but out of reach, there is a small tablet to Dr. Magnus, who lived from 1900 to 1966. The inscription reads, "By whose selfless devotion and consummate professional skill, a great number of his fellow men were enabled to retain their sight." Your next stop will be in the choir. Walk to the end of the monument and then take about 9 paces. Turn right to find the steps leading up to choir level. Go up 5 steps and through the open wooden doors. Just inside the doors are 5 rows of chairs. Follow the end of these rows along to the front and find a seat to listen to the next section. Occasionally, the choir doors may be closed before a service or for a rehearsal. If they are closed, please ask for advice from a member of the minster staff. Switch off now and switch on again when you've reached the front row of seats in the choir. You are now in the heart of the cathedral, where services take place nearly every day. The high altar is to the east, your left, at a higher level. Behind the high altar is a 19th century stone screen, which lets in both sound and light from the Lady Chapel. To your right, down 3 steps, are the choir stalls. Beyond them is the pulpitum screen. Below you is the crypt, which was filled in when the choir was rebuilt in the 14th century in the perpendicular or upright style of Gothic architecture. Above you is a wooden ceiling with web-like vaulting. The ribs are joined together with decorated keystones in the form of carved gold and coloured circular bosses. Along the sides of the choir is an arcade of tall pointed arches, and high above these are windows with more of York's renowned glass. These features all combine to provide a glorious setting for the worship which has been carried out here for more than 1,300 years.
The choir area is large, and the sound here is somewhat distant. However, it is very clear and bright. This is partly due to the wooden vaulting overhead. You will hear the sounds of the nave and the Lady Chapel and their reflections coming back over the screens that divide the space. Turn your head and compare these sounds. The service of Evensong takes place here every weekday afternoon, and visitors are always welcome. Listen now to the cathedral choir singing an anthem which was recorded during Evensong. It's "Jesu, the Very Thought of Thee" by Sir Edward Baerstow, who was organist at the minster from 1913 to 1946.
Thank you.
The names of the Minster organists are known as far back as 1474, although the present organ, situated on top of the pulpitum screen, only dates from 1829, when it replaced an older one destroyed by fire. Since then, the organ has been regularly renovated and reconstructed. In 1961, an enlightened tonal scheme was drawn up by Dr. Francis Jackson, Minster organist from 1964 to 1982. This successfully combined the needs of the liturgy with those of the organ repertoire. The organ, which is used daily, had a further complete restoration by Geoffrey Coffin in 1992. The pedal department was redistributed and a few new stops added. Now listen to some music played on the organ. The piece is Prelude in C minor by Bach.
You will next visit the cathedra or the archbishop's throne. Get up now and walk straight forward 9 or 10 paces across the choir to find the seats on the opposite side. Then take 5 paces to 2 o'clock to find the wooden surround of the cathedra. The surround, about waist high, forms a box pew. In the surround is a door which opens inwards. There's a small catch on the inside. Open this, enter the box pew, close the door after you, and take a seat. Switch off now and switch on again when you are seated.
You are now seated in the surround at the base of the cathedra. All the woodwork in the choir had to be replaced after a fire in 1829, when Jonathan Martin hid in the minster and set light to it at night. This was one of the many recorded fires that the minster has suffered, dating back to the year 741. In the 18th century, both fire and lightning struck the building, and in 1840, the roof of the nave was destroyed when a workman accidentally left a burning candle in the southwest tower. After the 1829 fire, all the woodwork in the choir was replaced in the same style. You'll be able to feel that the shapes and motifs in the carving on the wood around you are similar to the cast iron railing you explored earlier. The presence of this archbishop's throne, or cathedra, makes this church a cathedral, although it is popularly known as the Minster. The archbishop, patron of the project Cathedrals Through Touch and Hearing, will now tell you about his work.
You're sitting just below the throne where I normally sit when I attend a service in this part of the Minster. Actually, I don't sit in it very often. Some people seem to imagine that bishops or archbishops are always in or around their cathedrals. In fact, in an ordinary year, I would probably expect to worship here about a dozen times, usually on great occasions, as when I consecrate a new bishop or ordain men and women to the ministry. Most of my time is spent in other places. My home church is the chapel in the house where archbishops have lived for 750 years. So then what do I do? Well, I have a diocese to look after, the Diocese of York, a very large one, stretching from the Tees to the Humber with some 600 parish churches. Fortunately, I have a good deal of help with that, and there are 3 suffragan bishops who have much more time than I have to go round the parishes and help the clergy and involve themselves in the day-to-day running of the diocese. But I carry the overall responsibility. And then I have what's called a province to look after, and that consists of the 14 dioceses in the north of England. And about half my parish engagements are in these other dioceses. So, for example, on one Sunday I might be in a parish in Manchester, another Sunday in Sheffield, or I could be lecturing in Durham, or having a teaching session with clergy in the Isle of Man. There's what's called Primate of England, I share with the Archbishop of Canterbury in guiding the Church of England at national level. This means a lot of committee work in London. It means taking a lead on national issues, so I'm often in contact with the media, broadcasting, being interviewed, writing articles for newspapers. I'm also much involved in relations with other churches, and until recently was on the Central Committee of the World Council of Churches. And this took me abroad to all sorts of exotic parts of the world. I'm also a member of the House of Lords and speak there from time to time. So you can see, I lead a busy and a varied life. Not much of it spent sitting on this throne. But the presence of the throne here is a constant reminder to me that the heart of what I'm doing is about the love and worship and service of God.
By now, you'll have realized that a building of this size requires a large number of people to care for it. Apart from the administrative staff, there are the vergers, cleaners, flower arrangers, marshals, and guides. The Minster also has its own police force, founded after the 1829 fire. There are also the members of the Minster Broderers Guild, who embroider vestments, frontals, and kneelers. A Lenten high altar front was commissioned from Jacqueline James, a visually impaired textile designer who has carried out many similar works for other cathedrals. Also important is the works department. Care of the fabric of the building is a continuous process. In 1984, the disastrous fire in the south transept called for a major restoration project. This was done skillfully and with great expertise in only 4 years. Particularly interesting are the new bosses, which illustrate the ancient hymn, Benedicite Omnia Opera Domini. Praise him, all you works of the Lord. 6 of these bosses were designed by children, who won a competition organised by the BBC television programme Blue Peter. The day here starts quietly with early morning services, cleaning and flower arranging. Gradually, the number of visitors builds up until it's time for evensong. Then peace begins to descend, and the space of the minster itself can once again be heard.
Your next stop will be the crypt, place number 5. Leave the box pew, closing the door behind you, and exit from the choir on the south side. You entered from the north. Go down the 5 steps, which are only a few paces away from the box pew door, so take care as there is no handrail. At the bottom of the steps, turn left, and walk about 12 or 13 paces down the aisle to find on the left the steps leading down to the crypt. However, as the steps down to the crypt are rather steep, you may prefer to continue along the aisle to the end to find the Chapel of All Saints. It has a tall metal screen and gates in front of it. Sit in here and listen to the section about the crypt. Do remember, though, that the sound in the chapel will be different from that in the crypt. The chapel is reserved for private prayer, so you may like to sit quietly for a few moments before switching on again. For those visiting the crypt, go down the steep steps, using the handrail on the right. Continue forward past the back of a row of chairs. At the end of them, you will find a central stone column on your right. Stop by this. Sometimes the crypt may not be open. If it is closed, continue to All Saints Chapel. Switch off now, and switch on again when you're in the crypt.